Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Good morning and welcome to another creative conversation. Today we have on the line Laura Schaefer. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Alpha. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for inviting me to do this.
Oh, I'm glad you're able to do it. In your busy schedule, I was looking at all the work you're doing over there at Yellow Compound. And it's just, you know, your website, everything. I just, you know, I'm amazed at the amount of work that you've produced over there. Could you tell us a little bit about Yellow Compound?
Well, thank you for your kind words, Alpha. We've been here 5 years. We moved here in 2016. And before that, this space was owned by Michelle Grabner and Brad Killam. And they ran the Suburban here for, I think, 17 years, I want to say, before we moved here. And the Suburban was a gallery and an alternative art space of its own. And I just remember looking at it and reading about it and kind of had this fantasy of it and always wanting to come and somehow never getting there. I think my kids were little and was living in Hyde Park. And then finally, actually, we were in our last project space in Hyde Park. We were in the 57th Street. We were on 57th Street, and it was the O'Garan Wilson Antiquarian Bookstore before. Then it was closed. They moved out of Wilson. And we took that storefront. And I'm telling you this because we were in that storefront, and I ran into two people who came in to look at the installation that we had up there, and they were looking pretty spiffy and had some nice clothes on. And I said, "I don't think you're from Hyde Park. Where are you from?" And they said that they were from Oak Park. And they said, we started talking about Oak Park, and I kind of asked them about the art scene there. And I said, in Oak Park, you've got the Suburban, which is really great. You have contemporary art there. And he said, no, not anymore. They moved. And that's when this guy told me to check it out because the Suburban was on the market. And that's how we got here.
Well, that's great. So before we really jump into the present day, let's talk about you and where you've been in the last 20 years. I know I got this email from you where you weren't able to attend the lecture that I did with Pop-Up Research and Phantom Gallery owner Liza Simone, and when we did that on March 21st, and you sent me an email that you were sorry that you missed it, and you'd like to really talk about, you know, what you're doing and how you had did the pop-up before coming even to the United States. So let's talk about your trajectory and what you've been doing as an artist and organizer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I wrote that to you because there's so much going on all the time, and I like being reminded of the past, and there's a feature of Facebook that I love that reminds you a year ago you did this, or it's one of the best things on Facebook for me because I think we forget, right? We forget on a regular basis what we've done, who we've worked with, because your life is just going on. And to be reminded is really important. And when I saw that you were giving this lecture, I was reminded of you and of that time that we worked together, of those two times, actually. And I'd really love to hear you tell me and reminisce about that. But it reminded me of you, and it reminded me of everything that you're doing. And I became aware in that moment that we have so much in common, and our interests and our research and our projects have so many kind of interconnections that I just wanted to reach out to you and let you know that I was sorry that I missed that lecture. I was really looking forward to it. And that I wanted to reconnect with you, which is, I guess, what we're doing right now.
Right, and I'm so glad that you did that.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you did that, because I wouldn't have known about what you're doing currently with the, with the yellow compound. Well, let's talk about, you said you were, before coming to the United States, where were you? London, Brazil?
No, actually.
Berlin.
Berlin, yeah. I was, so when I went to school at the Philadelphia College of Art, which is now the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. And I went to school with Fong Bui and Tom Wozniak and some really, Pat Lyons and some really amazing artists. And I went in a different direction than a lot of my friends. After we graduated, I decided, a very, very dear friend of mine, Tom Wozniak at that time, died suddenly. And that changed my life. So I decided not to go to continue my education. I decided not to get an MFA and not to go in that direction. I got on a plane and I went to Europe. And I kind of jokingly say that I just didn't come back for 13 years. But I did come back. I did come back and forth. But I basically lived in Europe for 13 years. I lived in Milan for 2 years, and I lived in Portugal for a year. And then we moved to Berlin, and I lived in the east of Berlin after the wall came down for 8 years. And then I moved back home.
Were you in Pankow?
I'm sorry?
Were you in Pankow? What part of East Berlin were you?
I was in Mitte. I was lucky enough, so lucky, to get a place on Rosa Luxemburgstrasse. And it was an amazing apartment, and it was an amazing program that they were running at that time to get people to move into these apartments in the east that were pretty run down and fix them up. And I love this program so much. I talk about it all the time. But it was a very tedious process. It had you had to go to the kind of civic center, and they had a list of all of these empty apartments in East Berlin. And in order to get one of them, you would select, first of all, I mean, it, in a way, this is kind of symbolic of the rest of my life after that. But you had this endless list, and you would go around the city, around the east part, and look from the outside at the windows of the addresses on this list. And you could probably only, look at 10 or 12 of them, but it got you walking around the eastern part of Berlin, and you would look up and you would see where the apartment is. Is it on the third floor? What does it look like? What's the building like? What's the street? And you would choose like 5 to 7 of these addresses. And then you would put your name in with the addresses that you would like to actually physically go and see. And someone would go through all these names. And I don't know whether it was a lottery-based decision. I don't really know. But at some point, you would be called. And if you were called, then you got to see the 7 places. So it took me about 9 months to be called. And then I got to see my seven places actually physically. And that was also an incredible experience to go through these buildings and to see these apartments that had been, left in kind of ruined states. And then you choose one that you think that you can actually renovate, maybe with the help of friends, right? But that you can handle financially and also physically. And then you say, okay, I would like that apartment. And you may or may not get it because you're looking at all of these apartments with about 10 to 12 people who are doing the same thing. And they choose the apartment. And so I was lucky enough to get an apartment on Rosa Luxemburgstrasse, right near the Fernsehturm and near the theater. And it took me 2 years to renovate the place. And sadly, we left in 2 years. But it was an amazing process because you renovate the place, and after you've renovated it and it's been inspected, you get to live there kind of forever. It was kind of a rent control situation. So I just thought it was a brilliant program and a brilliant way to have all of these places renovated and then house the people who renovated them in a way that they would be able to afford these apartments.
So that's kind of like how your foundation basically was kind of formed by doing this whole process, you know. And so now that you're... Now that you're back in the States, you know, and you came back, and what was that about? How did you re-enter into the landscape here of the city?
Yeah. So when I moved here in 2000, I had met someone on a vacation here and fell in love, and we were going to get married. And so I moved back home. And also after being an expat for 13 years, I was really feeling a lot of longing for my family and being home. And also I didn't want to be an expat for the rest of my life. I wanted to deal with what I ran away from, really. So I came back home in 2000, and it was a very, very hard transition to go from living in the heart of East Berlin to coming back to Chicago in America. I think the projects that I started here were started to ease that grief of loss of another life and to try to transition into where I was at, which is Chicago. I wanted to know the artists. I had missed the 80s. I missed the 90s in Chicago, and I hear that it was really amazing. And I missed all of that. And I wanted to get to know the artists who lived here. I wanted to know the art scene. And I wanted to try to kind of find myself where I was. And so I convinced my husband, very much against his will at a certain point, to rent a big empty, the people who lived there were leaving. It was like a loft above the Arc thrift store on Milwaukee Avenue. And we rented that place. It was well above our budget, but we decided that we would turn the front of it into a gallery. And that was the first time that I recognized that the problem was that I was very depressed in that moment in this transition of my life. And I felt very isolated. And I thought, well, the way that this could be a strategy, right? A strategy to kind of heal that pain and deal with the isolation by opening a gallery and inviting all the artists to show their work there. So we did that for about a year. And that was a little bit I had imagined, I'd never done it before, really. I mean, I'd organized art exhibits and things in East Berlin, but I'd never started a gallery, a home gallery kind of thing, apartment gallery. But we showed really great artists. We showed Conrad Freiberg and what is now Luftwerk, but they were Sean Galero and Petra Bachmeier then. And we showed wonderful artists. We showed some artists from Berlin and some artists from Chicago, young. And it got me, I was able to meet a lot of people, and it was wonderful. But still, it was not really that satisfying because people were just kind of coming in and smoking and drinking and staying there all night. But nobody was really talking about the art or really looking at it. And so, and then during that time, and I'm like a terminal storyteller, so I actually got pregnant. And so we lived above a nail salon, and the nail salon didn't have any ventilation. We had to move. We had rats. We had people, coming in from the street because our doors weren't working. We had no bathroom.
When you say Milwaukee Avenue,
right.
Were you in Logan Square? What part of Milwaukee?
We were in Wicker Park.
Okay, Wicker Park.
That
was precursor to the explosion of the arts that are happening there now.
Oh, yes. I mean, there were a lot of apartment galleries there. There was, I think it was, I'm sorry that I've forgotten a lot of the names, but Heaven was there right down the street.
I remember Heaven, our gallery.
And it's still there. It's still there. It's just really great. And then there were many other smaller kind of apartment galleries there at that time. And I remember someone, and I hope he forgives me, but I've forgotten so many names. But he started a kind of mapping project of all of the apartment galleries at that time, and so that it was a good time.
I think that's about the time I came into the landscape of Chicago, like 2003. Even though I moved here in 1999, and I was at the School of the Art Institute. And that was my segue into the city and with Chicago Public Art Group. The same way when you come into a city, you go into the pulse of the community that you're familiar with, the arts, and that's how I got a chance to use that platform to come into the city. So I'm not surprised to hear like your trajectory and how you again fell back on what we do in terms of the arts and finding these spaces, and so that's where we are now. So everyone knows like this is in terms of how the neighborhoods have spread out, and I want to talk a little bit about how artists contribute to the vitality, overall vitality of a city. And you're talking now that you're in Wicker Park and you've seen this explosion of art. That's during the era when a lot of artists were saying, hey, I'm just going to do the art in my apartment, open it up to the public. And they created these, again, like a huge mapping project of all this that's going on in the city. And you can continue the story. I'm really interested in the story. That you were telling it before. And this was, how did you, from the nail shop, now how did you get out of being over in Wicker Park, and how did you get to, what's the link, and how did you arrive in the south side of Chicago?
Yeah. So we left that apartment. It was called Can Gallery. And we did that for a year. We had about 12 shows, and we did that for a year. And then we moved over onto the north side for a little while. And I had my first child, Jasper. And then we had a second child, Sebastian. And I remember the first brush with the south side for me was, I think we were moving into an apartment. And we bought something, I think, on Craigslist. And it took us to some place on the south side. I remember at that moment I was thinking, I didn't grow up really in, I grew up in Chicago until I was about 13 or 14, and then through circumstances of my my family moved away. I knew about the South Side. I knew people from the South Side, but I'd never really had much experience living there or spending much time. And I remember all my thoughts at that moment of, like, what is the South Side like, you know? And it turned out that we were trying to figure out where we were going to move, because we were living in an apartment and we wanted to buy a place, and our kids were little, you know, two and or three and one. And we thought, where do we want to live in the city? And we were visited actually by a very dear friend of mine who still lives in Berlin, Wilfried Kuhn. And he visited us in Chicago, and he's an architect. So he was kind of giving us an architectural tour of Chicago. And he said, you need to move to Hyde Park. And I respect him so much that I thought, okay, if he tells me I need to move to Hyde Park, that's where we need to move. So we ended up looking, and we looked for about a year. And finally, the day before I was to go into the hospital to have my child, I found this little townhome that was perfect for us. And we went to see it that night, and we got it, and that was 1470 54th Place. And that began our lives in Hyde Park. And that began the first project that we did there again. We did many years after that. And that was called Home Gallery. And I think the kind of what I realized from Can Gallery was that I didn't really want to be a gallerist. I had no interest in that, and I didn't want to be a commercial gallerist at all. I had no interest in any of that, and I had no interest in really owning a gallery. But I really loved the experience of being with the artists and with artists and around them. And I thought, well, you know, living in Hyde Park, I recognized one thing pretty quickly. And that was that it's very isolating to have little children and be an artist, because you don't bring them. It's hard to bring them around into these spaces that are kind of not made for them, and these art galleries and art institutions. So I thought, well, I wish there were some small little galleries around my neighborhood, but there were no galleries in Hyde Park at that time. So we didn't have any money. So we thought, well, we kind of somewhat own our walls, so let's just use our walls. And so we opened up the whole house and we invited our first artist we invited was Casey Roberts. I had seen his work around, but I hadn't seen a lot of it, just one or two pieces, and I thought, I'd like to see a lot of his work. So we invited him to show in our house, and he said, yeah. Which was just amazing to us. And we opened up our whole house, and we let Casey show as much work as he wanted in the entire house, from the kitchen to the bathroom to the basement to all of the rooms. And then we invited the public in, and we wanted to know our neighbors too. So we invited all of our neighbors and anyone in the public realm. And we did that for about, I guess, and about maybe 7 years we did that. We have, you know, a few shows every year. But at a certain point, we realized that our kids were starting to grow up, and we could not use their rooms because that was disrespectful to their privacy. And they let us know that in no uncertain terms. And so we thought, well, we can't do this anymore, because it impacts the lives of our families, our kids. They don't have privacy. So we and also it was very private. You'd have an opening and then you'd have a closing, and people did come in and have like appointments where they would come, and we had some classes come. But you know, you had to live there too. So you had to kind of clean up everything to make it look nice. And so it was hard. And we thought, well, let's do something public. But again, we had no money, and it was 2008, and it was kind of the economic downturn of 2008. And we thought, there are some other needs that we started to understand that we thought we had personally. So we thought maybe other people have these needs to connect, to have spaces outside of your home, third spaces, fourth spaces, to have gallery spaces. We had no thrift store in Hyde Park. Artists didn't have studio spaces. I had heard that some students at the University of Chicago were musicians and didn't have any place to play. And I thought, well, these are some, and some people talked about not having like amenities, you know, like not being able to go and buy socks and things like that in Hyde Park. And I thought, well, just why don't we open up a public space and try to address all these needs? And we started with the first one that was on 53rd Street or 55th Street. And, you know how hard it is to come up with titles, right? So I usually just kind of do the is what it is title. I figure you can't go wrong, you know, because I still like home gallery. It's just your home. But this time I decided, well, what is this? You know, this is an opportunity, these empty spaces. As artists, we all know that every empty space, every hole, every little place that we can inhabit in our minds is an opportunity, and we want to get in there and do something. So all these empty spaces were being kind of sat on for reasons that the community didn't really understand, you know, why is 53rd Street all filled with empty storefronts when we have needs. And so Jane Comiskey was my neighbor. I was very lucky to have Jane Comiskey be my neighbor. And she came to all the home gallery shows, and she said, Laura, you should, I do what people tell me to do, by the way, people I respect, you should open up a public space here in one of these empty spaces. And I had been thinking about it, so those things merged. And I said, okay, I will. And that very day, I was walking down the street, and I saw Peter Castle from Mac Realty. And I just said, hey, Peter, I was actually teaching at the little youth center there. I was teaching some kids. I think I was teaching preschool art, just making messes, which was great. And I think maybe his child was in it, but he trusted me for some reason because maybe I was his child's teacher. I can't remember. But I just said, hey, there's a lot of empty spaces, and I see that you own most of them, Mac Realty. So do you think I could maybe have one of them for just a nominal fee for a month to just try a project out? And he said yes. And people saying yes is just such a great thing. You know, that's why I try to say yes as much as I can. But he said yes, and that's what started the op shop. And I called it the Opportunity Shop because I love the title of that. I love that it meant thrift store. And I love the idea that an empty space is an opportunity. And so I started this project called the Op Shop. And that we had five iterations of that project.
That's when I met you at the mansion. And I was with the Time Border Bend Arts Collective and doing some experimental, you know, I do a lot of experimental sounds and, you know, working with Border Bend Arts Collective, Dan Gossett, the director of that, you know, and we came over the night that was the final closing, and we did this all-night concert, or just musicians that were jamming and doing experimental sound and, you know, projections and whatever, you know, we were doing, creating music, because we were doing a, what I'm trying to say about the closing of a space, it's not like we're doing that final closing. It was like, you know, blessing the space. Some people think about blessing the space is when you're opening it up, but we blessed it. All the creative programming that you had done there and all the work that you had put into that, and then you were leaving that space. And I was able to walk around, and I went to the thrift store. I went to the kitchen area. And I just thought it was an amazing space. And then, you know, when I visited it, and was there all night, you know, and I just wasn't able to, I didn't attend any other programming there. And I was sad to say that that was the last program that you hosted there to bless the work you had did in the space. And that was a huge contribution to Hyde Park and the art community there.
It's so meaningful that you reminded me of that night. And that event, and I think that's why I reached out to you too, because that culmination, that event that culminated all of the op shops, the home gallery, and then the Southside Hub of Production, which I started in that mansion with John Preuss and with Mike Phillips, Gabriel Piemonte, and that was one of the most amazing projects that that brought so many artists together, and we had so many amazing memories there that we shared. And your closing event, and Dan Godson is such a dear friend. Your incredibly creative closing event was really meaningful. And I think artists, what we do for each other is we remind each other, you know? And as you were saying, you blessed the house, and I remember that process. We make things matter. We make emptiness matter. We make history matter. Human beings, all of us, that's what we do, right? That's what we try to do. We try to make it matter. We try to make sense of it, and we try to give it form. And I feel like you made that whole experience really matter by everything that you all did that night. The sounds, the light, the color. I remember you were drawing, I think, on acetate and then projecting it onto the walls, right? But it was a very beautiful night. And we got that mansion after four small storefronts, each of them having a kind of focus and a story to tell. And all of this is storytelling, you know. And we got the mansion because the church next door, the First Unitarian Church in Cindy Pardo, who is no longer with us now, sadly, but she called me one day and said, "Hey, Laura, I see you doing these projects in storefronts, and we have this empty mansion that's been next to our building and is attached to our building, and it's been empty for years. It was the Blue Gargoyle and the Booth School, and it's called the Fenn House. And we wondered if you had any ideas for how to utilize that space." And I remember just like jumping out of my skin thinking, oh, yes, we have a lot of ideas. And so I called my friend John Preuss, and we talked about it, and we met with Mike Phillips. We met with all these people that over the years had been participating and creating these really rich community centers together. We did it together. And we called them, and we said, "Hey, what do you all think about inhabiting a 16-room mansion and pulling from everything we've learned over the years and all the needs that are still kind of unmet, and see if we can attribute each room to one of these needs?" And that's what started the Southside Hub of Production. And actually, we didn't get that building for a year. We presented, we had PowerPoint, I think that's the first time I learned that word, PowerPoint presentations. And we were trying to convince the church, no, really, we can do this. We can do this. And try trying to whittle down the rent, you know, from 5,000 to 3,000 to 1,500, which we settled on. And finally, after a year, and I had all, at that time, I had lost all the people that were into it when I first started the idea, right, because people had lives, they had to move on. And I was just doggedly determined to get that mansion. And so I stuck with it. I joined the church. I sang in the choir. I got to know everybody in the church. I became a very active member. And I said, I'll do anything to get this mansion and to try this idea. And finally, we convinced them. And I called
praise
John
the Lord.
And, yeah, John was gone, right? Everybody was gone. It was just me. And I called John. I said, John, we got it. We got the mansion. And, you know, he had moved on. But luckily, in one of his shows downtown, all of the furniture that he built, the beautiful furniture, and Mike was still with me, Mike Phillips. But anyway, he said, oh, well, this is serendipitous. This is interesting. I have all these chairs, like 50 of them, and I don't have any place to store them. I'll bring them right over. And so that's what started the whole thing. He brought in all of his chairs, and it set the tone for that beautiful home that we wanted to create for the community. It was the home for the community, and we were going to try to program it by the needs of that community. And we were hoping that the community, people from the community would share more and more of their needs, and that's what would become this program, right? It was a cultural center. It was a community cultural center in our minds. And so we worked really hard and cleaned it, and we took up all the carpeting, and we took down all the industrial, the institutionalization of it, and we made it back into a home. We took down all the, you know, the institutional lighting and that kind of thing, and we made it into a home. We had a lot of volunteers, a lot of people that worked together with that. And we decided that it was never going to be perfect, and it was never going to be done. The work was never going to be done, so we just had to start. And our first show was called It Is What It Is. And we called it the Southside Hub of Production, the project shop. Our first show was, a 30 to 40 person artist show through the whole house. And we had like the soft shop that was by Casey Beyer and her husband, Kim. Chris Lynn, excuse me. Carol with names. But they created the soft shop. Then we had a thrift store in there. We had places for people to play music. We had a community wood shop. We had studios for artists. We had space on the third floor for the Chinese elders to dance in the wintertime. We had places to have memorials for and anything that people plays. We had every Sunday, we had a potluck dinner open to the public. And we ran the Southside Harbor production together, all volunteer. The church, for their reasons, needed to sell the building. They needed the capital, so they had to ask us to leave nicely, in after 2 years. So what ended
we're
going to
go full circle because we only have a few mm-hmm. minutes left, you know, and you've captivated me in this whole storytelling because you know your trajectory is so. You know, interesting and how you've evolved and moved and, you know, how we just make it, you know, and balance family with, you know, our art careers. So coming full circle now, I know there's another project that you also did before coming over to Oak Park. And so we want to take the last 5 minutes of our creative conversation and talk about now and then, what you're doing now and how all of this 20 years later, you know, of you evolving as an artist, organizer, independent cultural producer, informal teacher, and how you are, you know, in Oak Park and how all of this has manifested into what you're doing now with this Artist Run project. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and I'm sorry that I kind of, well, my story's took so long.
But it's your trajectory. It's what you, who you are and how it shaped what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I have a few kind of main words and quotes that I feel like I go back to all the time. And I'm glad that you brought up my family, too, because, you know, of course, I couldn't have done any of this without them. And in many ways, every single thing that I've ever done since my children came into the world has been about them. In my mind, kind of for them. But creating a space for intergenerational communication and creativity was really important to me and still is for all ages to come together, creating a space for all ages to be together, to reintegrate, and to spend more time together, more idle time, eat together, play together, build things together, has always been really important to me since childhood. Communal living has always been where I felt safest and felt well. My mother was divorced and she lived with other mothers. And it was during the 70s, you know, the Parents Without Partners movement.
Right.
Which tossed a lot of mothers and their kids together into, you know, communal living. And those were the best times for me. So I keep trying to recreate these things. And I think in many ways that's what bonds a lot of us together, artists who are interested in what people call social practice now, is to regenerate, right? Revisit, reconnect. And so we moved from Hyde Park because we felt like all of the empty spaces were now filled. You know, at that time, the University of Chicago gentrified all the 53rd Street and the needs were kind of being met. And as you know, I know you know, we need to move, you know, we need to change. And that's why I always like start projects with a new name. And it's the same work. It's always the same work, but you can retitle it, you know, and it has a new life. And you revisit all the old ideas and you revisit all the old people and all the people.
Maura?
Who,
Maura, because we're running out of time on our Creative Conversation episode, I'd like to invite you back to do a continuation of this conversation and also to Space in the Gap, and that's with my co-researcher, because I think that we can expound more and give you more time because you've done I looked at your website, and how can people get in touch with you and read up about what you're doing in Oak Park? What's your website again?
It's Compound Yellow. And it's www.compoundyellow.com.
And then we're going to continue a conversation. You would love to continue our conversation?
I would love to continue this conversation, and I'm honored that you invited me in the first place, and I'm honored to be invited again. Thank you, Alpha.
Thank you so much, and I am looking forward to having our next conversation with Maura, and we're going to schedule that conversation because I really would like for you to be a part of our research and what we're doing here in the arts.
Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.